Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for July 2005. This is issue number 244, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX Audio Service, sitting out here in the backyard. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. If you live in the United States of America or Canada, would like to become a member of the DX Audio Service, the cost of a subscription is $28. To Europe and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep your cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your check payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned, or simply log on to our website at www.nrcdxas.org and look for the Join Us link at the top of the page. Well, as I said, we're sitting out here in the backyard just kind of enjoying the morning. We've got Bill Hale coming up on deck, and I think between Bill and John and Mark, we're going to move to a couple other locations and see what kind of trouble we can get into on this Saturday morning.
Thanks again, Fred, and welcome everyone to AM Switch for the DX Audio Service for July 2005. First of all, as usual, we'll hit the call letter changes. On 540, KXME in Carmel Valley, California has taken the new call of KRXA. A new station on 1100 in Las Vegas, they've taken the new call of KWWN. Can you imagine KWIN in Vegas? Nah. 1120, WMNY Buffalo, New York has chosen WBBF for their new calls. 1150, WWFN Macon, Georgia, they've taken WAYS for a new call sign. 1160 KBIS in Highland Park, Texas, their new call, KMGS. 1170 WLGO in Lexington, South Carolina, their new call, WQVA. 1220 WHKZ in Cleveland, their new call, WHKW. 1290 KRNP in Santa Barbara, California, has taken the new call of KZSB. 1330 in Conway, Arkansas, KTOD has changed to KXXA. On 1350 WTOU in Akron, Ohio, their new call, WARF. 1360 in Jasper, Alabama, WZPQ has chosen WIXI for their new call. On 1410 KMYR, Wichita, Kansas has chosen KGSO for their new call sign. On 1440 WHKW, Warren, Ohio, they switched with the Cleveland station, now WHKZ. On 1460, KIRL in St. Charles, Missouri has chosen KHOJ for their new call. WTKO in Ithaca, New York on 1470 has taken WNYY for their new call. And finally, on 1580, WZZJ, Pascagoula, Moss Point, Mississippi, their new call, WPNP. Turning our attention now to stations which have changed facilities during the past month, on 580 WTCM in Traverse City, Michigan is now on with U4, 50,000 watts during the day and 1,100 watts at night. On 630 WDGY Hudson, Wisconsin is now on with U4, 1,000 during the day, 2,500 at night from the transmitter site of WCTS 1030. There had been applications to change the city of license to St. Paul, Minnesota, but this authorization, dated 1 June 2005, clearly states Hudson, Wisconsin. We'll keep an eye on that. 760 KCCV in Overland Park, Kansas is now on with U4, 6,000 watts during the day and 200 watts at night, adding that night service. 1130 WPYB Benson, North Carolina is now on with 6,500 watts during the day and 1,000 watts during critical hours, which raises their day power and adds that CH operation. 1130 WQIS in Camden, South Carolina is now on with U1, 1,000 during the day and 7 watts at night, adding that night service. 1160 KMGS Highland Park, Texas is now on with 35,000 watts during the day and 1,000 watts at night, U4. They are currently stunting with an all Motown format, and they've just moved up from 1150. 1360 WTAQ in Green Bay, Wisconsin is now on with U4, 10,000 watts during the day, 5,000 watts at night, doubling their day power. 1390 WEED in Rocky Mount, North Carolina is now on with U1, 5,000 watts during the day and 30 watts at night. This is a reduction in nighttime power, and they now a non-directional operation. And WAKE 1500 in Valparaiso, Indiana is now on with 1,000 watts during the day, 25 watts at night. You won. Some grants to existing facilities. WNOP in Newport, Kentucky has been granted a construction permit for U4, 2,500 watts during the day and 30 watts at night. 750 WNDZ Portage, Indiana has been granted a CP to add one tower to their current pair in order to increase their power to become D3, 15,000 watts during the day, and of course nothing at night. Their pattern will be adjusted a few degrees to the right, centered at 315 degrees. 930 WHLM in Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania has been granted a CP to increase the nighttime power by adding a second tower. When operational, WHLM will be U2, 1,000 during the day and 100 watts at night. 950 KMER in Kemmerer, Wyoming has been granted a construction permit to move to 940 kHz with U4, 240 daytime watts and 150 watts at night. 970 WCHN in Norwich, New York will be adding nighttime service as U1, 1,000 watts during the day and 34 watts at night. KICA 980 in Clovis, New Mexico has been granted a CP to add two towers to their single stick in order to increase the daytime power. When operational, KICA will be U5, 50,000 watts during the day and 172 watts at night. Remember that U5 designation is directional during the day but non-directional at night. The near-round pattern aims around 160,000 watts ERP at 030 degrees from Clovis up over Oklahoma and Kansas. KBUF in Holcomb, Kansas on 1030, they have a CP to increase power levels and add critical hours designation. When operational, KBUF will become U2, 2,500 watts during the day, 1,200 watts at night, and 2,500 watts during those critical hours. 1150 WGEA in Geneva, Alabama has been granted a CP to increase their daytime power to become U1, 1,400 watts during the day, and 35 watts at night. 1200 KFNW West Fargo, North Dakota, their application to upgrade to U4, 50,000 watts during the day, 13,000 watts at night, was reinstated and granted in a matter of a week. They'll be adding two towers to their array in order to facilitate those changes. 1250 WNEM Bay City, Michigan has been granted a CP to change city of license to Bridgeport, Michigan, and increase power levels to become U4, 5,000 watts during the day and 1,100 watts at night. 1260 WWVT, Christiansburg, Virginia, their request to increase daytime power and add night service has been granted. When operational, WWVT will become U1, 5,000 during the day and 25 watts at night. 1300 WKCY in Harrisonburg, Virginia has been granted a construction permit to increase their daytime power while decreasing the nighttime power. When in operation, WKCY will be U1, 5,700 watts during the day and 22 watts at night. A new 195-foot tower will be erected adjacent to the existing one, which has become structurally unsound and in need of replacement. 1470 KVLH, Paul's Valley, Oklahoma has been granted a CP to reduce power, the tower height, and nighttime efficiency as they become U4, 890 daytime watts and 35 watts at night. Finally, on 1550 WAZX in Smyrna, Georgia has been granted a CP for U5, 50,000 watts during the day and 16 watts at night from a new four-tower site. Grants to pending facilities. A new station, WVOA 720 in DeWitt, New York, is not on the air yet, but they've been granted a CP for U4, 10,000 watts during the day and 390 watts at night. With this new arrangement, they will utilize two of the current five nighttime towers and add a sixth tower to the site for a total of three for daytime operation. Some news from Canada to report. The move of CHUC Cobourg, Ontario to 107.9 FM with 1.03 kilowatts has been approved by the CRTC, so another Canadian graveyarder bites the dust. The CRTC has revoked the license of CKCQ 920 Quesnel, British Columbia, as the FM station scheduled to replace it has taken to the airwaves at 100.3 with 1,800 watts. CBRB 860, which is CFRB's low-power relay in Banff, Alberta, will soon be replaced by an FM station at 96.3 MHz with 1,180 watts ERP at minus 222 meters. The CRTC has approved the application by CHAT 1270 Medicine Hat, Alberta, to move to 94.5 MHz on the FM band with 100,000 watts. The licensee is authorized by condition of the license to simulcast the programming of the new FM station for a 3-month transition period following the commencement of operations of the FM station. Well, Sean Axelrod took a break from managing megawatts on the Manitoba grid to say, and we quote, "Flight 1280 at Pearson International Airport in Toronto has been suspended until further notice by the Greater Toronto Airports Authority. The transmitter is still on, but the station's audio is dead and has been for a few weeks now. The reasons for the suspension are unknown at this time. The station is used for flight time info, traffic to and from the airport, and info on the airport." Some notes from here and there. It has been reported that KBVA 1450 Bayside, Virginia, and WVAB 1550 Virginia Beach, Virginia, as well as KMYL 1190 Tolleson, Arizona, have turned the plate voltage to the off position. Also off, but due to extenuating circumstances, is WCBG 1380 Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, whose tower came tumbling down. Remember when the city of Chambersburg took the land of the former WCBG 1590, making it go off the air, as reported here a few months back? Well, the owner of the 1590 facility bought the 1380 station and moved the calls there. Now his tower falls down. The guy must have broken a mirror or opened an umbrella indoors, huh? Anyway, the 1380 facility should return with a new tower in a few months as it's constructed. Perry Crabill sends the update on WSVG, and we quote him. WSVG 790 Mount Jackson, Virginia, returned to the air on the morning of May 30th with a local morning program until 10 a.m. The station should be operating 24/7 by the time you hear this. Format is big band at press time. The telephone number is 540-477-4443. And the email address is wsvg@shentel.net. Studios are at the transmitter site at 543 Hawkins Road, Mount Jackson, Virginia, 22842. And their postal address is P.O. Box 425, Mount Jackson, Virginia, 22842. Well, Mike Hardister, writing on the NRC's AM list, reports that the New York Department of Transportation has reportedly placed 3 new HAR transmitters in operation during construction along Interstate 90. On 540 at the exit 9 at Northway, on 830 at the I-90 and I-87 interchange near Thruway exit 24, and on 1610 from Schenectady to exit 24 or beyond. IDs, which are assigned to mobile units, may be, if you hear them, on 540 WPFI 377, on 830 WPFM 232, and on 1610 WPFM 233. WNVV 205 is listed as the base station in the Albany area. A couple of fines to report this month. MB Communications Incorporated, the owner of WYLF 850 in Penyan, New York, has been assessed a fine of the amount of $11,000 for operating with a power in excess of the station's authorization during daytime, post-sunset, nighttime hours, and other violations. And KCHK 1350 New Prague, Minnesota, has been fined $4,000 for failing to reduce power at local sunset. The FCC claims that KCHK did not reduce its power from 500 to 70 nighttime watts on four specific nights it was monitored by agents from the St. Paul field office. Well, thanks to Sean Axelrod, Dean McIntyre, and Jerry Starr for info this month. Well, that's a wrap for us. It's time to swing the microphone over to Florida Sun Coast and see what John Bowker has for us on this month's travelogue.
National Radio Club.
And you're listening to the DX Audio Service from the National Radio Club.
National Radio Club.
Well, thanks once again, Bill Hale, and hello, everybody. Welcome to the travelogue. And, Bill, I guess you're proving that the FCC even keeps busy during the summer. Of course, I live in the lightning capital of North America, so you can imagine how much DXing I get done in the evening around here. But a special thank you to Michael Piesco, one of our subscribers, who sent in a good cassette of stations around the Detroit, Michigan area. Michael, you have some good equipment. I hope you'll take another trip sometime, maybe somewhere else, and fill us in with other AM station breaks as you go. And I think you may have found, as so many of us have, that recording station breaks as you get to the destination of a trip can really add a lot of spice to the trip itself. Makes it a lot more fun. Thanks so very much. And by the way, if you have any recordings of station breaks that you'd like to contribute to the travelogue, of course, we need legal IDs. That means the call letters and the city of license. We only collect AM stations, that's all. And if you'll send them to the travelogue at P.O. Box 5192, Sun City Center, Florida, 33571-5192. we'll be greatly appreciative. Oh, and by the way, most of the recordings we have come from regular boom boxes, just the cassette recorders that are built in. You're going to hear a couple of recordings today that were done with a microphone placed in front of an automobile loudspeaker as the people traveled. Those are the only recordings we have of those stations, and so, of course, we keep them in the Travelog collection. But if you can get a direct recording, they'll sound a lot better. Okay. Last month we left you off in the Deadwood section of Rapid City, South Dakota. We're going to move over to the National Park in Wyoming, not too far from Rapid City. As we start the July 2005 DX Audio Service Travelogue.
You're listening to KWYF 920 AM, KEZQ 96.5 FM in West Yellowstone. CNN News is up next.
Sunday the poll. Tobacco industry and immigrants with nowhere to go win the day at the U.S. Supreme Court. Articuliano joins us now live from Washington with details.
And that's one of the examples I wanted you to hear. That is West Yellowstone, KWYS, right at one of the entrances to the national park. Well, let's head south next into Colorado.
In a house full of love. That's Gary Allen right here on the Giant of the High Plains, AM 920 KLMR. We're seconds away from ABC News. Don't go away for that. It's time now for ABC News on AM 920 KLMR, Lamar.
Saying all the time and data lost to the I Love You computer virus is costing business gigabucks.
The crime of developing and distributing a virus should be a capital offense. The penalty should be life imprisonment in a prison cell with a Windows computer that doesn't work. Make the punishment fit the crime. That's the rule. Well, back in 1991, Linda and I took our new motorhome at that point for its first transcontinental trip, and we stopped in the city where every year they have the most photographed event in the world.
KQEO, Albuquerque.
KQEO, Conan Weekend.
That once-a-year event, by the way, in Albuquerque, is held in early October. It's the Balloon Fiesta, hot air balloons, hundreds of them that take advantage of what's known as the Albuquerque Box. Well, let's see, in 1996, Linda and I revisited Albuquerque, and then in 97, Mark Strickert was there, and 98, Mark Durenberger was there, and we all picked up different versions of their new ID.
Hi, this is Chris Jackson. I hope you'll join me Monday through Friday from 6 to 9 in the morning for Albuquerque's best talk show on Hot Talk 920 KHTL.
Love us or hate us, either way, thanks for listening. This is Hot Talk 920 KHTL, Albuquerque.
Well, let's head up to the northwest now on our trip across the country at 9:20 on the dial. I must tell you that Utah is a beautiful state, but there are parts of Utah that are kind of remote from everything else. In fact, this next station in Vernal, Utah, the closest we could get to it easily was from Green River in Wyoming, 70 miles away. Listen.
Basin's favorite hits from the 60s into the 90s. This is 920 KBEL, Vernal Roosevelt Rangeley.
Our rodeo's for you, cause cowboys travel far to be a rodeo star and ride a bronc or two.
Ride across your shoes? Well, okay. I'm not able to keep up with modern music, I'm afraid. Let's go to the southwest out of Vernal, Utah, into the gambling capital of the world.
And we started things off with Time Alone Will Tell, Jerry Vale. And that's going to do it for Chuck Manning and for Larry Allen Wells all this week. ABC News is up next, and Fred Hall swing things. And this is AM 920 KORK Las Vegas. It's 6.
From ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. The next hurricane could be hitting people with 80-mile-an-hour winds tomorrow morning on...
You know, that local announcer that gave the station break, he sounded just plain bored. Goodness sakes. But here's a gal who doesn't sound bored.
Call toll-free 888-287-1787.
Stay tuned. The Corn Dude, Tony Kornheiser's coming up next on the station where sports is bad. AM 920, KBAD, Las Vegas.
Coming back. Loretta lines it there to right field. There.
Well, I suppose that's a way to make a name for yourself. You know, I've heard of stations saying great sports, And I've heard that we're good sports. But how many stations say that they're bad sports? I don't know. Let's go north in the state of Nevada to the city of Reno.
Gee, Ed, I hate to leave everybody hanging on the wall like this, but that sort of is the way it is, mostly because it's the end of the show. 5 o'clock coming up in Nothing Flat. I'm Travis T. Hip. None of the foregoing commentaries and opinions have in any way reflected reality as perceived by this station, its management, owners, sponsors, or staff, but are solely the responsibility of myself and Cabal News Services. Stay tuned for Kahala Carter next after the news on KQLO Reno.
This is the NBC Radio Network. I'm Wes Richards.
Well, okay, let's continue our travels now at 9:20 on the dial. We'll leave Reno, headed west up through the Donner Pass into California, down into the state capital at Sacramento, and an hour and a half south of Sacramento. This is kind of a long ways of getting there, isn't it? Is a little town, which is really a suburb of Modesto.
Modesto.
And of course, we were listening for KLOC Series Modesto, and that the only station in that set at 9:20 on the dial. Now we're going to go down into Southern California.
It is 10 o'clock at KKAM Palm Springs. The news is next.
Another multi-million dollar religious fundraising campaign apparently has worked. Jerry Falwell says his campaign to raise about $10 million.
Okay, we'll change our heading to the north now and go back 17 years. That'll take us up to the west central part of Oregon.
Winning begins Wednesday on Pure Gold KGAL.
KGAL, Lebanon, Albany, Corvallis.
Final ratification vote set for Eugene today.
And then we were back in Lebanon in 1992.
Touch your clock to 12 noon and your radio to AM 920 KSHO, Lebanon, Albany, Corvallis.
I'm Donna Alday on the Satellite News Network.
And on that same 1992 trip to the Great Northwest, Linda and I stopped in the state capital of Washington.
KQEU, Olympia, Lacey, Tumwater.
Nobody does it better.
They drive long distances. Boldly brave the elements.
And then in 1994, our son John visited the area.
Yes, but a whole bunch more. Well, check it out. I'm Bruce Williams. I hope you'll join me 7 nights a week from 10 to 1. It's all here on AM 920, The Capitol.
92 is The Capitol. KCPL, Olympia, Lacey, Tumwater.
USA Radio Network News, this is Eric Rinderley.
And we'll go to the opposite end of the state, the eastern end of Washington, where Pete Taylor made a visit back in the year 2000.
All right, we are creeping up on the top of the hour. ABC News coming up, and then Tom Grant will be featured in our 11 o'clock hour. We'll learn everything that Tom can teach us.
Yes.
News Radio 920 KXLY, Spokane's news, traffic and weather station.
John Belmont.
Well, thanks for that one, Pete. We'd sure love to see you in Culpsville over Labor Day for the NRC convention this year. But that recording sets the pace for us to head west out of Washington. Where?
You are listening to the lively sounds of KMTH, Radio 92, broadcasting from the Blue Room, high atop Hangar Towers, located in beautiful downtown Midway Island.
I'm not sure how to describe that fellow that gave the announcement of that call sign. I guess lonesome would. Well, let's move on. We come to the second example that I started today's program with, and don't get the idea that I'm complaining. This is the only recording we have of a station in Canal, British Columbia.
You're listening to CKCQ, AM 920, Quesnel, CKWL, AM 570, Williams Lake, and CKBX, AM 840, 100 Mile House. Wild Country.
And way back east in Halifax, Nova Scotia, a bit more civilized.
The Travel Info Show that tours the world and takes your calls on where to go and what to expect when you get there. Sundays at 5 on 920 CJCH.
Good morning. This is Talk Radio 920 CJCH in Halifax.
And finally, from the province of New Brunswick, this is about the best we usually expect from Canadian stations.
CJ Radio Woodstock.
Well, that wraps up what we have for the 920 dial position for the Travelog, and next month we'll be starting the 930 frequency, or perhaps as Mark Durenberger would prefer, we'll call it the 323 meter dial position. Well, in fact, Mark is back with part two of his story about the complexities of trying to develop radio regulations during the first half of the 20th century. Here's Mark.
Well, John, you know, last time we barely dipped our toes into this thing, and as you point out, it was getting to be quite a complex matter. This month, we'll see how the government decided to step in and get tough through its voice, the Federal Radio Commission. We'll also talk about the early thinking about national coverage and superpower. The Federal Radio Commission's first major attempt at creating order out of chaos came in 1928 as their published General Order No. 40. By its structure, this order finally demonstrated some regulatory consistency, and it would send a signal to broadcasters that they could safely commit to improving their facilities. What happened next may be typical of an exploding industry with terrific upside, an industry that had a sex appeal that would attract serious investors. In 1930, the FRC allowed 50-kilowatt operation on 20 of those 40 channels we discussed. 2 years later, it officially recognized the term clear channel, and in 1933, authorized full power on all 40 of the wide area frequencies. What full power meant would be a subject of some intensive maneuvering over the years. Once these authorizations were on paper, broadcasters began to improve their facilities. And by the mid-1930s, many stations were cranking out 50 kilowatts and building solid transmitter plants, many of which are still in operation. But even with 50 kilowatts, the coverage of medium wave stations had its limit, and the need for solid nighttime service to the unserved white areas remained a front burner industry issue. Proposed solutions included more stations and/or higher power. The idea of massive transmitter plants certainly had appeal. Power levels well above 50,000 watts were the usual suggestion. And Radio News in 1931 combined the idea of high power with the use of the long wave band. In a well-researched proposal in its April issue, the publication suggested that 7 geographically dispersed 1 megawatt stations operating at low frequencies, 200 kilohertz, could cover the entire country with fade-free reception. These stations would be connected by landline. They called it direct national coverage. The devil, of course, would be in the details. Well, the Federal Radio Commission thought that was interesting, but they weren't ready to license long-wave operation in this country or to solve the coverage problem by other means until they had optimized the use of the existing medium-wave spectrum. In the next few years, two events occurred that would affect the battle to define nighttime medium-wave service. First, through a series of court actions and rulemakings, other stations were allowed on 10 of the 40 protected channels. These early 1B duplications would set a precedent for future shared use of the 1A channels as well. The second development occurred in May 1934, when WLW in Cincinnati began a 5-year experiment, broadcasting under special temporary authority at a superpower of 500,000 watts on 700 kilocycles. WLW went superpower at the same time serious opposition to the broadcast giants was beginning to materialize from the have-nots. One of the reasons the opposition to clear channel operation was so intense that WLW's 500 kilowatt signal raised the specter of domination of the media by the few. I cannot help but observe from this perch in 2005 how much of this is irrelevant. Well, in the Roosevelt years, Congress, in response to pressure for new radio regulation, enacted the Communications Act of 1934, creating the Federal Communications Commission. One of the early tasks facing this new FCC was the resolution of the legal and political attacks on the clear channel stations. As large targets, the Clears were challenged from all sides, from petitions to deny to cross-filing on license renewals. In two such cases of cross-filing, John Shepherd III counterfiled in 1934 for full-time operation on 640 and 830 kilocycles and forced the operators on those channels into long and expensive hearings until his challenges finally were denied in 1936. Interestingly, however, even though at the time the other channels were still, quote, fully protected, both 640 and 830 were granted secondary stations in the 1940s, 640 in Ames, Iowa, and 830 in New York City. These grants were in the form of special temporary authorities. They never went away. The FCC had more to do than think about Clear Channels, and its reputation as a body deliberate and informed often was brought into question. As an act of protection, in 1934, a number of large stations united behind Edwin Craig of WSM to form the Clear Channel Group, later known as the Clear Channel Broadcasting Service, or CCBS. CCBS operated as a cooperative, typically including about 16 of the largest stations, and they were the primary advocate for the protection of the Clear Channels. CCBS was careful to limit membership to those operators who demonstrated a clear commitment to the preservation of Clear Channel service. They had some concerns because some of the networks had dealt away some of their 1A protection in deals with the FCC. So the bylaws of the CCBS initially denied membership to network-owned and operated stations. By the end of the 1930s, all of the 1A and 1B channels were operating at 50 kilowatts. The stations on some of the aforementioned duplicated 1B frequencies had to directionalize their signals to protect another station on the frequency, and typically there were two, sometimes three. The 1As, on the other hand, operated full-time non-directional as the only domestic nighttime assignment on their frequency, with the exceptions mentioned. Their combined SkyWave service covered a good part of the U.S., but there remained a large underserved nighttime white area, particularly in the West. Well, the FCC did want to solve this white area problem, but it had other matters before it in the mid-1930s. In particular, it was focused on preparing the U.S. position for the upcoming North American Regional Broadcasting Agreement, or NARBA. That NARBA, in 1941, would bring about a major frequency reshuffle to accommodate the needs of neighboring countries and to allow stations in the same market in the U.S. to operate closer together in frequency. In developing its proposed station inventory list in the 1930s, the FCC engineering staff evaluated the overall health of the AM broadcast band and asked for proposals to better utilize the spectrum. In a 1937 internal report, FCC engineers Ted Craven and Andy Ring outlined a proposal to make better use of the medium wave band. They proposed across-the-board power increases and suggested six channel classes to be defined by service area, from 100-watt locals to wide area A channels of 50 kilowatts plus. While they recommended continuing protection of the 25 1A channels for single station operation, they also suggested that co-channel duplication on these clears might be a better use of the spectrum, but only if the stations were separated by at least 2,500 miles. These 1937 suggestions by the FCC engineers are of interest to us as we continue our story. They would be cited by both sides in the coming battle to dispose of the clears. It took a long time, but the power increase plan for the local and regional station classes finally came about, separate from the clear channel matter. And today we have 50 kilowatt stations on regional channels, previously limited to 5 kilowatts. And we have 1,000 watts day and night on local channels previously limited to 100 watts. Engineers Ring and Craven stopped short of recommending superpower, but in positioning for the upcoming NARBA, the FCC said publicly it might authorize power in excess of 50 kilowatts on the 25 US 1A channels. In response to this notice, several channels immediately applied for increased power. Those applications were as follows, with their operating frequencies before the 1941 changes. In 1935, KNX applied for 500 kilowatts on 1050. a raft of applications in 1936. WJZ, now WABC, applied for 500 kilowatts on 760. WHAS applied for 500 and then 750 kilowatts on 820. WJR applied for 500 kilowatts on 750. KDKA applied for 500 kilowatts on 980. KFI applied for 500 kilowatts directional on 640. WSM applies for 500 kilowatts on 650. WOAI on 1190, WOR on 710, WGY on 790, and KSL 500 kilowatts on 1130. In 1937, WBZ applied for 500 kilowatts on 990, and in 1938, WHO at 500 kilowatts on 1000. It's interesting that two radio stations applied for 500 kilowatts on 540, but had their requests turned down. Probably because the U.S. was negotiating with Mexico to reserve 540 as a Mexican clear. Imagine what the AM band would be like today if even a few of these applications had been granted. Well, these superpower applications were tendered while WLW had its temporary authority for 500 kilowatts. Other stations may have been doing high-power experimenting as well. According to Radio News of April 1932, and we quote, "Anticipating the continuing and increasing rapid growth of broadcasting service, KDKA has recently built a new 400,000-watt transmitter at Saxonburg, Pennsylvania. The new station has been operating experimentally between 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. All of these superpower applications were eventually withdrawn or dismissed. The applicants would file again, however, but that's getting ahead of our story. WLW's operation demonstrated the real-world impact of expanded power levels on adjacent channel interference and on the economics of advertising sales. It also caught the attention of Congress. In 1938, the Senate passed a resolution against powers in excess of 50 kilowatts. The FCC politely declined to be ordered about by such resolutions. But superpower had a lot of broadcasters concerned, and politicians have always been responsive to the broadcasters in their home states. WLW's special test authority lasted 5 years, kept afloat by repeated requests for additional time. The reasons the FCC finally stopped the operation are no longer clear. It's probable that interference was a major issue. After all, early on, WLW had to directionalize at night to protect a Canadian adjacent channel station some 350 miles away. It's also likely the FCC staff might have weighed in at some point with an energy consumption edict. Radio veterans recall a World War II mandate to all high power stations to drop power by 40-50% to conserve energy. That power restriction was lifted for daytime operation on September 1, 1945, and fully lifted in October of that year. And at that point, we were back to 50 kilowatts. But some folks were still dreaming of superpower. And that's the end of part two of the Clear Channel matter. We hope you'll stay with us because we have a long way to go as we bring this thing to its ultimate conclusion and to the question of whether all of this was to the benefit of the AM band. Mark Dernberger here for the DX Audio Service. We'll be back in 1 month to continue the Clear Channel matter. Until then, good listening, DXers.
Announcing the National Radio Club DX Audio Service, Culpsville 2005. This location is going to be the Best Western Inn, and it's located at 1750 Sumneytown Pike. That's in Culpsville, K-U-L-P-S-V-I-L-L-E, Pennsylvania, 19443. By the way, that's a suburb of Lansdale, Pennsylvania. The hotel's telephone number is area code 215-368-3800. You can also call the 1-800 line, which is 1-800-277-3615 for reservations only. Room rates are $75 per night. Be sure to mention the National Radio Club for this rate. Room sharing is limited to 4 people per room. Convention registration is $45 for the banquet and $35 for the wife, $20 for convention only with no banquet, and $10 for the wife. Registration is starting at 9 a.m. on Friday evening, an illustrated tour of AM radio in Tampa Bay, including an explanation of just what the heck is Tampa Bay. Saturday morning, a tour of Philadelphia radio stations WFIL 560 and WNTP, the old Wibbage 990. Carpools will be arranged. Saturday afternoon, a display of radio newspapers and magazines from the 1920s and 1930s. Complete lists of radio stations from the early 20s up to the present for your review. Saturday evening, the annual NRCDXAS meeting, an auction of valued treasures. And on Sunday morning, the wake-up quiz. You can win all sorts of candies just for yelling out correct answers to important radio station trivia. Dress rehearsal for the October DX Audio Service Travelogue featuring stations at 9:30 on the AM radio dial. The annual official NRC examination with a free one-year membership going to the winner. Sunday afternoon, Dave Marthouse will entertain with his stories of how small market AM stations in a small market can not only exist, but they can thrive. Sunday evening, the annual banquet. And guest speaker Dave McCork, who's operator of internet radio station WNAR, along with a Part 15 station in nearby Lansdale. Monday departure with a promise to reassemble next year. Please note, a special program for ladies is in the works and will be announced as soon as possible. Auction items can be sent to Mr. Dave Schmidt, Post Office Box 3111, Scranton, Pennsylvania, 18505, or by regular mail. The Best Western has a good restaurant on site, but lots of others in the area. And that's all the information we have for now. If you need more information, please contact Dave Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, Post Office Box 3111, Scranton, Pennsylvania, 18505, or email nrcmusings@aol.com. Well, it looks like these two CSX SD40s are about ready to pull out east out of the Cole Street Yard. They've got about 80 cars filled with grain, just came out of the Cargill elevator. I'm going to bet you they're going to go up to the DT&I junction, take the switch, and then head north up to Toledo, where they get offloaded onto some lake freighters, and the grain goes, well, who knows where it goes. But I think I'm going to beat feet over to the Flanders Road crossing, which is on the other side of town, and we'll catch them on side two of this tape. And speaking of catching things, we hope that you catch your tape in time, as we're mailing this out at the end of the month, but we have, of course, the 4th of July holiday, which might delay mail, but keep in mind that your tape is not due until the 10th of the month. That's July 10th for this edition. I know we have a couple of members who are real antsy about getting their tapes, and they'll call up on the first or the second day asking where their tape is, but it's not due until the 10th. Next month, we are going to be mailing from a location out west, so we'll see how well that mailing works out. We'll be mailing hopefully on like the 25th of the month, and we'll see how fast it gets to you. But we'll catch you on side two, because it looks like these guys are pulling out right now.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side two.